WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Father Anthony DeConcilies moved to New Orleans in August to start his new position as president of the community college Our Lady of Holy Cross, which was founded with the mission of helping the poor. He was inaugurated August 26th. 3 days later, when the hurricane struck, he stayed at the school where he felt he belonged. As the waters rose, he knew he had to get out. He was rescued Wednesday and evacuated to the Superdome, where he stayed until Thursday afternoon. We called him in New York and asked what he observed at the Superdome.
When you first entered, everyone, of course, was concerned about their homes, and many people were trying to take with them their belongings. Little pieces of material, it looked like, or trinkets or toys, and guarding them in a sense of holding them to their hearts. And that gave you a sense of the fear and the trepidation of the people there. Of course, many of the people there did not have a lot of possessions in any case, I would imagine. And when you got through the line to be searched for weapons and other articles that may hurt somebody else, you had a sense that you were moving into an atmosphere, an environment that was safe but cautious and unsafe. And it was a sense of being locked in almost, because when you went in, you knew that you weren't going to get out easily out of that building.
What were your prayers like then? I mean, I don't want to invade your privacy here, but I'm wondering, like, in a time of crisis like that, when you were in the Superdome, were your prayers more a kind of meditative kind of prayer, or more of a sense of, like, trying to directly communicate, asking for something? I mean, what was the nature of your prayer?
The nature of my prayer was to engender courage and fortitude and a sensitivity for other people, and not to reflect so much on what was happening to me. And so I asked God to help me to move out to others, and in that way keep me clearer on the needs of others than my own needs.
You said that you prayed for courage. Were you afraid in the Superdome? It sounds like there'd be plenty of things to be afraid of.
Certainly. I think anyone who was not concerned was not seeing the reality of the situation.
What did you do to pass the time? I mean, I imagine it was pretty dark, even in the daytime.
Well, there was enough light that you could read, and I had a Bible with me, and so I read.
You read the Bible?
Yes.
What did you read? Which parts?
Oh, I read St. John, and I read those areas where of St. Paul where he talks about courage.
And why St. John?
Oh, it's my favorite, one of my favorite Gospels.
Why?
Because St. John is a gospel of love, a gospel where he shows a tremendous affection of God for his people, and is not as factual as the other synoptics, but his gospel really shows how much the affection God had for his people, and that always has impressed me over the years.
Times of crisis and catastrophe tend to test people's faith. I mean, some people lose their faith. Some people find faith they never had before. I'm wondering if there was any point where you felt like your faith was shaken, or if people you know had their faith shaken.
Well, I can't answer for other people, but for me, it was like a second wind. We always talk about the Holy Spirit coming into, breathing into life into the disciples in the upper room. In a way, I feel that happened to me. I can't express it yet, and I'm going to be writing about it, certainly. But it was a new breath, a new way of looking at life and faith for me, rather than a challenge to my faith at all.
In what sense was it a new way of looking at life?
Well, as you can imagine, most of the people in the dome were people from the city of New Orleans. And given that so many had so little, I looked at that and I said to myself, this is where my college is and where we are living. And how can we serve more and more of these people in our college, and indeed all the colleges? because it is education that helps so many people move from one step to the other.
Father Anthony DeConcilies is the new president of Our Lady of Holy Cross College in New Orleans. The college is now being used by police and reservists from New York. This day of remembrance for the victims of Katrina comes less than a week after the fourth anniversary of the September 11th attacks. My guest, Alice Siebold, wrote an op-ed piece for the New York Times reflecting on both catastrophic events, titled Living with the Dead. Siebold is the author of the best-selling novel The Lovely Bones, which was written from the point of view of a 14-year-old girl who was raped and murdered and is now in heaven, watching her family and friends carry on without her. We invited Siebold to read an excerpt of her op-ed piece, Living with the Dead.
What can the living do in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina and 9/11, where loss has greeted us twice on a national scale in such a short span of years? Do the dead wish you to suffer? Do they want you to watch CNN and Fox News for days on end? Do they want your guilt or pity? All of these things are like jewels to them. In other words, valueless where they have gone. Instead, a woman wants her husband not to forget her, but to go on and live. A child longs for a lost mother's arms again. A man grows peaceful when his partner finds new love. Some of the dead, I imagine, get enraged at these things. They are dead after all. They get to do and feel, I hope, what they want to. The living, who are close to the dead, have a well-marked path of grief to walk down. But what about the rest of us? What can we, the distant, those of us who live in Nebraska or California or the very tip of Maine, do? You are in your kitchen or your backyard or stuck on an endless elevator ride. You are sitting with a book in the park. Perhaps it is an image you remember having seen. A handmade grave of sheets and bricks. Here lies Vera, God help us. Perhaps it is the voice from a message left on an answering machine. They have told us to remain at our desks. I'm okay, Mom. I love you. Perhaps it is less specific. Bodies falling from high windows, bodies floating in muddy water, bodies wrapped in dirty bedding and tucked along the sides of bridges and highways, the faces of the missing, taped and tacked up on a wall. Whatever it is that comes to you in 3 months, 6 months, a year or more, don't turn the page of your book and forget. Don't stab the elevator button, trying to hurry up the trip. Stop. These tragedies, it's worth remembering, grant us an opportunity to understand what is perhaps our finest raw material, our humanity, the way we at our best treat one another, the way we listen to one another, the way we grieve.
Ella Siebold, thanks for reading that. Why did you decide to write this piece?
I think I was overwhelmed, as almost all of us were, by the images coming out of New Orleans and how helpless almost all of us were, those who were there and those far away. And in that helplessness, I just kept seeing the people who were dying or who were at that grave that I speak of in the in that passage, Here Lies Vera, God Help Us. That was an image that had a lot of impact on me because it was a pretty early image, and it was a beautiful grave, and it was out of sheets and rocks, and it talked about, even in the midst of all that helplessness, the attention that was given to that dead body, and it touched me a lot. And I think out of those images, I just felt like I wanted to go to some kind of prayer. In some sense, the piece that I wrote is some type of prayer for me in that way, to acknowledge the dead and to hope to have communion between the living and the dead.
You know, your piece is about the importance of keeping the dead in our memory, and that's what this day is about. Why does that feel so important to you? And we're talking here of dead people that you don't know. Where do you live?
I live in California.
Right. So you're at a remove.
Right.
So how does one keep alive the memory of the dead that you don't even know?
Well, I think, you know, the honest answer to that is you will never know the specific facts of these people's lives. So you can't grieve them or honor them in the same way of those people that did know them. Perhaps part of it is because I naturally go toward narrative, but you honor them by thinking of them, by remembering the images that you might not wish to remember, that might be difficult to think about, and by imagining them struggling for life and acknowledging that you could be in that very position yourself. So it's a certain sense of putting yourself in the position of the person who has died and honoring them in that moment.
And you think that just like thinking about the dead is a potent way of doing that? It doesn't have to be a more formal kind of prayer.
That is what I do because I like I said, I'm not somebody who prays in a formal way. I think that it you have to be very aware of what you're doing, and you're doing it for them and for yourself simultaneously. I think it can be very potent, and I think sometimes what's dangerous about a more formalized prayer is that you end up saying words that you're not connecting with necessarily. You're doing it because, oh, well, this is the time to pray. We pray now, and then tomorrow I go and buy an SUV. And my sense is that, no, make it fluid, make it, in some sense, whenever it comes to you, as opposed to a specific time. I would hope that one doesn't have to be efficient about grief, and that it can be spread across whatever days that the images come back to you. This is something that's going to be, you know, in our newspapers and on our television for a very long time. And the idea that it only exists when the TV is on, or it only exists one day of the week, I think is a foolish belief.
On this day of remembrance, what do you think is like the power of keeping people in our memories?
First of all, I think part of it is just it comes down to how you want to live. And so you are making a conscious choice to keep them in your memory. For me, I will say in a very selfish, it's a selfish choice for me to think that the dead are somehow present in life. It's a form of playing with the world in some sense. And inviting the dead to play with you instead of sealing them off forever as separate from us. I think that's what I just instinctually feel doesn't make sense, is that when people die, they're gone physically, but they're everywhere simultaneously, I think.
Alice Siebold, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Alice Siebold's article, Living with the Dead, was published last Sunday in the New York Times.